computer's online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for T120K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are go.
T minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T minus 10 seconds.
Flight check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here it's your host, Leto Sanek.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Leto Sanek. Today we're speaking to Mark Adamczyk and Andrew Eiler, who are working on something that's going to have a lot of interest to people listening to Black Op Radio. So welcome both of you.
Good evening, Len.
Hey, Len. Thanks for having us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for thinking of Black Op Radio. September 29th, there's a letter that you've shared with me right now to the U.S. House of Representative Anna Paulina Luna, and we're going to discuss that today and get into your reasons for the letter and the hopes and, I guess, dreams of what we can find out. So I turn it over to you. Tell me the history of this.
Mark, you want to lead it off?
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Len. You know, really where we're at is with the task force on declassification on federal secrets led by Representative Luna in Washington has done a lot. It's been very busy this year. If everyone remembers going back to January, President Trump issued an executive order stating that it's long overdue for the records on the JFK case to be fully released, in addition to those of the RFK and MLK case, and that's what his order covered. That order asked for a plan from the Director of Intelligence and the Attorney General and the White House staff to come up with a plan to get it done. And then we started seeing records releases, about 60,000 or some odd pages were released in total this year. And then of course they started holding hearings, which I think most folks listening to the show right now have seen in April and May, which was great for the most part. I mean, it really got a lot of things on the record that either had been sort of on the record over the years, certainly not going back to the HSCA, the House Select Committee in the 70s, but you know, you had Oliver Stone, Jim DiEugenio, Jeff Morley, and then Doug Horn, Judge Thunheim, Dan Hardway, et cetera, that you know, told their story and experiences, and it was great. You know, for those that don't know much about the case, it was eye opening, right? And so the one piece of testimony that grabbed my attention and Andrew's as well was Judge Thunheim, because, you know, Andrew and I, for the better part of 5 years now, have been laser focused on the JFK records collection and trying to understand what happened in 2017 when President Trump had the first attempt to release the records as mandated by the JFK Records Act. And make sense of what happened there, why it wasn't done, why there were broad delays, and then how we got to 2025. But when Judge Thunheim testified on May 20th to the task force, it was eye-opening for us in particular, because he said things that, you know, if you know the JFK Act, would send off alarm bells in terms of violations with that statute and the lack of oversight, such as, look, that review board, the Assassination Records Review Board that Judge Thunheim chaired going back to the early 90s when the Records Act was passed after Oliver Stone's movie. You know, that review board was their whole function was to review assassination records and decides which ones could be postponed and not released immediately there in the early 90s. Right. And when Judge Thunheim was called to testify, I'm so glad he was. He said, look, we never saw many of the records that are now being released in 2025, and that really concerned him. He also testified that when President Trump in 2017 had the chance to, finally end the debate on this and comply with the statute and ensure that everything would be released by then, he had the chance to do that. And he really, according to Judge Thunheim, should have only had to make a final decision on about 1,500 records. And what did we see instead? Between 2017 and today, we saw over 73,000 records released by the National Archives, the latest of this being this year. And it's like, what is going on here? The review board never saw many of these. It should have been a very small batch in 2017. Now we have over 70,000, specific records being posted on NARA's online catalog. And that was alarming. And of course, I'll give major deference and congratulations to Andrew for understanding the review board's decisions, their final orders on declassification going back to the 90s, and knowing that research that Andrew did. And I certainly caught up on it real quick and agreed with everything he was saying. It's like, okay, this what Judge Thunheim is saying is directly supporting what your research and what we've been working on for a few years, and it really gave us a strong reason to start writing to Representative Luna to say, okay, you've had some great hearings. You've heard about, the George Joannides case with the HSCA. You heard Jim, you heard Oliver, you heard Doug Horn's amazing testimony about the medical records and the missing records that need to be located and disclosed. And then of course, Judge Thunheim. So we now are at the stage where this task force, here it is October 1st, only has a few more months left to get some important things done. And in our opinion, we don't think that the JFK records collection as a whole has been given enough attention in this process. It's been very fast. They've done a lot of things. A lot of records have come out. Some researchers that are very close to Representative Luna are getting the records that they want to see released. But we don't think that cuts it when you look back what the act requires for everything that the review board saw and did not see. And we can get into that, needs to be out. And when you look at President Trump's order, is that in fact everything still at the National Archives? We have a high degree of certainty that it's not, and it really goes back to the review board's decisions and starting with those and making sure that those were carried out at a bare minimum, and that opens the door to understanding the remaining problems with the records collection. Because if you're going to have a final report of this task force, which they will be issuing in the next few months, we really believe that it should address the oversight needs at the National Archives to make sure that that there isn't another there's an election in another few years and another president comes in and says, well, I think there should be more time. No, if there's no understanding of what's in the collection now at the National Archives and the work that needs to still be done, this thing may never get the attention that it deserves. The act, the JFK Act, may never be complied with. And that's the urgency we see. And that's why we wrote to Representative Luna this week to try to create some urgency around the issue with the records that we see.
Wow. Well, you're doing something. I mean, so many people are just watching from the sidelines and trying to see what's happening. You guys are doing something. So hats off for that.
Yeah, Len, Mark and I, it's kind of interesting. I'm up here in Ontario, Canada. Mark's down there in Southern Florida. And back in 2017, we both were fully aware that there was a deadline under the JFK Records Act to release all the records on October 26, 2017, which is the 25th anniversary of the passage of the JFK Records Act. And just independently, since we're both, like, Mark's an attorney down in Florida, I'm a lawyer up here in Ontario, we both pulled out the JFK Records Act and started to study it in advance. I did, at least in 2015, 2016, I started to develop an understanding of the act, and I believe Mark did as well. But in, I think it was 2020, late 2020, early 2021, Mark and I really started to research the act, and we also were active in researching and drafting lawsuit against President Biden for and the archivist of the United States for the release of these records. And what we identified very, very early, so we're talking like spring of 2021, we identified several issues that that we saw as really being problematic in terms of compliance with the act. And you know, this was widely discussed. We saw a problem with the identification aid system, that the identification aids are forms that the agencies had to use. They're prescribed by the JFK Records Act. They provide identification information for each record, who the originating agency was, the number of pages, just a whole bunch of information. But they also provide some of the metadata when the records were transmitted to NARA, and the reasons that the agencies were seeking postponements about. So under the act, they had to maintain an identification aid system for each record that was submitted to NARA to be reviewed by the Assassination Records Review Board. And we saw problems with that system because there wasn't an index and directory of those identification aids that was easily searchable or findable on NARA. And that index and directory is mandated by the law. So that was a central focus of our initial research and of our initial draft of the lawsuit. We also looked at the issue back in the spring of 2021, and throughout our effort to research and draft the lawsuit about the problems surrounding what are called non-executive branch records or congressional or legislative records, because we saw that the Church Committee and the HSCA records were not being fully released after 2017. And that too is required by the laws, as the president doesn't have authority over congressional records. It's a separation of powers issue. Congress has control over congressional records. The president has control over executive branch records. So those were two of the main issues that we identified way, way back in 2021. Now, what has developed since then is a far better understanding of the framework and processes of the ARRB and of the National Archives. And because the what's called the Administrative Procedures Act applies to the processes of the ARRB, both Mark and I really were our thought process is, well, there's got to be written reasons for the each decision to postpone the records. And I did a deep, deep dive in terms of looking through the act for clues and keys as to what exactly was required. And I've talked to you a few times before about the ARRB final determinations. And what we ended up finding is that the Assassination Records Review Board issued almost 30,000 individual legal orders called final determination notifications that governed the periodic review and release of the assassination records. But despite knowing that these records exist, we couldn't find very many. I ended up going to the National Archives in November of 2024, and I was only able to pull out about 450 of these records. And again, there should be 30,000 of them. And out of that 450, as we've discussed on your previous show, a large number of them showed that the records should be released in 2006 or 2008. But what the records actually showed is that these records were still being withheld well beyond 2017 into 2020, 2023. And there were many records that were even withheld up to March of 2025. That was from a very small sample of records. So there was demonstrable non-compliance with legal orders, binding and enforceable legal orders issued by the ARRB. But since we've only been able to find about a total of 750 ARRB final determinations to this date, and we've put in multiple FOIA requests for these records to the National Archives. National Archives have received those FOIA requests and acknowledged receipt, but they haven't responded with any of these records. And these records, the final determinations, were issued to be publicly facing, and they're part of the framework for an accountable, enforceable, and transparent system to review and release all of the assassination records. So this is the basis for the letter that that Mark, Jeff Crudell, and I put together last week and sent to Representative Luna on the 29th of September. And you know, I think like Mark had a big hand in this, and Jeff did. So I'm going to pass it over to Mark to maybe talk through some of the points of the letter, and I'll jump in
Yeah, sure.
if I got anything to add.
Yeah, I'd love to. Right. So this letter, the whole, we really wanted to put it into as brief a possible a clinical explanation of and it's broken into 10 observations and then 10 recommendations. So each recommendation kind of talks about, well, what we saw and what we think should be done. Again, the point is, with any final report, congressional report that's going to be issued at the presumably at the end of this year, we think it really needs to leave the archivist. Right now, it's Secretary Rubio is acting archivist, and there will be another one at some point with an understanding of the omissions over the last 30 years, and to say, okay, you know, what's done is done, but here's what we need to do to achieve full compliance with this statute that Congress unanimously passed in 1992. And at that point, they said, look, only in the rarest of cases should anything be still withheld then. And here we are in 2025. So the whole goal is to not focus on any particular group of records. You know, we have no issue with any researchers or those who are, you know, able to talk to Representative Luna about a certain record of interest, so they know where it is and that it's not at NARA and you should really go get it. That can continue. That's not what this is about. This is about making sure that if there's going to be an entire story, an entire collection, as Congress intended to show the American public as much as possible from the records as to the history on the JFK case, that this is it. The statute already said how to do it more than 30 years ago.
And
So,
Mark, maybe if I could jump in too.
yeah.
You know, the hearings have been great. The evidence has been great over the last, well, since April, really. There have been fantastic record disclosures of select records. And I think everyone who's interested in the JFK case has been excited to see the Joannides files. You know, now we have some files regarding William Harvey. And everyone in the research community is, including myself and Mark, is very excited that these files have been released. But what we really haven't seen is any focus on the JFK Records Act itself. And we have a very special act that created an independent, transparent, accountable, and enforceable system to review and release records. And the act itself 100% mandates congressional oversight about A, the assassination records collection at the National Archives, and B, it specifically requires congressional oversight just to make sure that the ARRB's final orders have been complied with. And you would think that, given this importance and the fact that this act was passed, given the fact that Oliver Stone, who was the catalyst for the act, testified back in April that the issue of compliance and oversight of over the act and the ARRB's decisions would be really front and center for the task force. Now, you know, this is a bit of an auditing issue, so it's not kind of the sexy stuff that that a lot of people want to see, like magic bullets and autopsy information. But this is really the bread and butter of the congressional oversight and compliance with the act. Mm. This should have been the first thing that we looked at, because without having a very clear understanding about what the status of each record is, whether it's been released, whether it's withheld, when it was transferred to the National Archives, whether it was reviewed under the standards of the JFK Records Act, you don't really have a lay of the land that you need to understand whether the act is being fulfilled. And so I'll hand it back to Mark. I just wanted to add that in. You know, look, the fact is that Oliver Stone, Jim DiEugenio, Doug Horn, Mark, myself, now Jeff Crudell, and a number of other researchers have called in writing. Many letters have gone forward saying, hey, we need this oversight of the actual act and the collection to make sure that we know what we're getting is the full right. record.
Right. Yeah, that's the first thing. I mean, the first recommendation or the first couple to Representative Luna and the task force is if you're you know, looking to satisfy this task force, looking to satisfy the public that President Trump's order takes care of the problem, you need to understand first, you know, what is at the National Archives and reconcile that. And so it starts really with a full searchable directory and index of everything in the JFK collection, which is records that went to the National Archives before the JFK Act in 1992. Those were, if they were at NARA as of October 1992 already, they were already required to be publicly disclosed in full without redaction. But those need to be in the collection in a subject guidebook and index that can be searchable so folks can find it, right? And then there, and then on top of that, which is a larger collection, is everything that's required to go to NARA after the act was put into place. And that's a lot of records. And to this day, there's still no searchable directory and index of everything that NARA ever handled in operating and carrying out the act and getting everything over to the review board, where an agency sought a postponement. And then the centerpiece of it is what was disclosed by the review board. What did it see? What did it make decisions on, as Andrew mentioned, in a final determination? And can we satisfy ourselves, and can the archivist satisfy the public, the president, and Congress, that everything that the review board saw, as it was, you know, mandated to do, which they did a wonderful job reviewing everything that was made available to it, Judge Thunheim and his board, is all of that work, are those orders respected by President Trump's order? And I think it's a little over 2,500 records that came out this year in NARA's releases. Is that everything? The bottom line, Len, is that there's no way to tell without an inventory and a directory of everything that was handled in accordance with the JFK Act. And we're just talking about, you know, what is there, because, you know, undoubtedly, and we've seen examples of this with the Joannides records and other things that have been, you know, very popular in recent months, that they may not be in the collection, or they were not in the collection, and folks know that they're there and they're going to, you know, due diligence to find them. We're just focused on, is everything that's at the National Archives, in fact, released? And there's no way to know. There really isn't. And when you see a certain number coming out, you know, maybe again this year or next year, it's just this statute is so powerful, and it's so organized and has these systems in place, that if we're not going to pay full attention to it now more than ever, we're going to have a huge missed opportunity. And we really think a final report on declassification issues around government secrecy. I mean, what better topic could there be than is the JFK collection full and has everything been released? If not, what is still withheld and why? And how is there going to be accountability over that? It can't be left to NARA and the agencies to figure out after January or December of this year when the task force is done. Well, we've seen how that's gone. There was 25 years of essentially nothing done in terms of oversight and review of the records from 98 to 2017, leaving us with this big mess. And what was done in terms of activity in that period, we don't know, because if the review board didn't see it, as Judge Thunheim testified to, then it, there's no telling what happened and what's still withheld in some, what I would consider an unauthorized or improper protected collection at NARA, that shouldn't be. If the review board didn't see it, those records need to be identified. We need to figure out what the status of those are. And if the review board did not see it, there's probably a good reason why. And, you know, if you lay out Judge Thunheim's testimony with, you know, Andrew and my research on things that the review board did not see, that really needs to be looked at by an oversight committee to figure out why. And it's not like we're looking for slaps on the wrist or, you know, you didn't get that out, but you got to identify it and see where the problem is. And it's like Andrew said, it's an audit, so to speak, but the act tells you how to do it, and it's not been done. And that's one of the main points we made in the letter is get a hold of everything that's there, so you know what is so. And we know,
Mark, I just want to make sure that one thing is totally clear here. We're really talking about three tranches of records, and Mark,
yeah.
Explained the first tranche is the records that were already at NARA before the JFK Act was passed. The second tranche are records that were obtained and transferred to NARA during the ARRB's operations between 1993 or 1992 and 1998, really. So that period after the Act was passed until the ARB ceased operations, that's the second tranche. But the third tranche was really raised the concern from Judge Thunheim's testimony. The third tranche is what was transferred to the National Archives after the ARB ceased operations on September 30, 1998. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that is starting to raise a lot of alarm bells, because a lot of those records were likely not reviewed by the review board. And we're seeing some indication that records were transferred like in November 1998. So that's like a month and a bit after the review board went out of business. We're also seeing a fair number of records that were transferred in 2000. And if that happened, there was no standard likely applied to withholding those records. And there's certainly not enough information that shows how those records were handled, how many of those records there are, and now whether all of those records have been released. The other thing that I think is important to say, there's been some discussion in the research community that the ARRB's orders are now moot or only of historical record. And the fact is, Section 11A of the Act, it mandates that the ARRB's orders, once a 30-day appeal period are over, become the binding and enforceable orders governing each of the records that they apply to. So what that means is that the ARRB's orders to release records prior to 2017 are the supreme and governing authority over those records that they apply to. And that takes precedent over all other laws, court decisions, and even executive orders, because there is only a very short time frame for agencies to appeal an ARB decision. It was 30 days. And all of those appeal deadlines expired back at least by, you know, October 1998. And President Clinton did not override or overturn one ARRB decision. So the idea that somehow President Trump's 2025 executive order somehow supersedes the ARBS orders, that's simply not true by way of law.
Yeah.
One of the things that bothered me is that some of these documents they say have been released and then they were redacted, partially, fully. That shouldn't have been allowed at all. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Well,
Yeah.
I mean, redactions were certainly allowed if authorized by the review board, which was the only body that had the authority to do it. So, if this audit was done, like you say, Len, and it was and if the 30,000 some odd review board decisions are located, which are still not been disclosed, only 2%, as Andrew alluded to, that he could find physically. And it shows, the result of those orders by the review board. Any other record that's not in that collection of final determinations that was released at a later time and redacted, well, who made the decision to redact it? And how many more of those are there like that? And those are the things that we're looking to make sure are resolved,
It's a matter of just simple compliance. And, Congress really probably should have started some oversight decades ago just to make sure that the archivist was on the ball and was complying with their ministerial duties. The archivist has many ministerial duties which are non-discretionary. They're mandatory duties. Under the JFK Records Act, and just even a little bit of oversight over the last 30 years would have made a huge difference in ensuring that the act was fulfilled, and there would only be, a small number of records. Like Judge Thunheim said, there only should have been 1,500 records that were still postponed as of October 26, 2017. And that's clearly not the case. I mean, Mark has searched high and low to try to get some reference point of the number of records that were released post 2017, and it is far greater than the 1,500 cited under oath by Judge Thunheim.
Yeah, and it's funny because that sounds like a good thing, but it's not. It's a little bit like saying, I'm running a business and I produce my financial statement showing my, receipts and expenses and my overall profit or loss, and you give that for to your accountant or something, and he says, "Well, where's your receipts?" And you say, "Well, I here's some, but I don't have them all." That's kind of, in a nutshell, that's the that's what we're dealing with here, is there's no receipts of every record ever handled at the National Archives in accordance with the JFK Act, and we're looking at these quote unquote results, and they can't be reconciled.
The one of the big things is neither Mark or I want to sound negative. We're really happy that the task force exists. We're extremely happy that there's been a reinvigorated focus on getting to the bottom of the JFK case. We applaud, a lot of the people that have testified and taken the time to really focus on this. And you know what? I think President Trump's executive order really kicked this off. And it's a fantastic executive order that is wide open. The one thing that it does not have is are any enforcement mechanisms. And so that's an important part. So President Trump has said in as wide open a way as possible, release all of the JFK assassination records. But without any teeth of enforcement, and really, there are teeth for enforcement. It's the JFK Records Act. And so Congress can still use the JFK Records Act to in combination with President Trump's executive order to really get to the bottom of exactly what's being held at NARA and if any of the other agencies have complied. And you know what? When the agencies find these new records and start to transfer them, the act still requires that they have identification aids before they get expeditiously transmitted over to the National Archives to be included in the collection. That's all still there in the JFK Records Act. Because again, you can't track these records unless they have identification aids and they're properly cataloged and put into the index and directory of records to show just the basic information so they're searchable. And that's been a little bit lacking. That Congress really needs to take a sharp and focused look at what the JFK Records Act provides them in terms of tools. And that's something that we've written in our September 29th letter. And it really all comes back to that searchable directory and index of records that will give us a comprehensive, full, complete, searchable view of each record and the status of that record, whether it's being withheld, whether it's fully released, how many redactions maybe still remain. And I don't, do you have anything to add on that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, we would love for the archivist to get to the point at the end of the JFK Act that says, look, once the archivist can certify to the president and Congress that every record that it ever handled since 92, or that was an assassination record as defined by the review board, if everyone has been disclosed in full and that can be certified, then the job is done. And as Andrew said, President Trump's order is a major step in that direction. And all you need for the archivist to get that done is a complete directory and index of every record that it handled. Of course, it starts with what the review board did, what the review board could not do or didn't have enough time to do or never saw. Those records can be handled, like Andrew said, under the JFK Records Act. It does call for independent review, which oversight committees can ensure. They could technically appoint a new review board to handle the trove of records that the original review board never saw, if it wants to, strictly comply with the act, or it could come up with another independent process in the spirit of President Trump saying, as President Clinton said in the 90s, like, everything should be out. I'm not going to interfere with the independent process. For legislative records, such as the HSCA records, Congress right now on its own could say those should be immediately released. Those are our records. Once we know what all of them, what they all are, what you have, NARA, in your index and collection, they can take a look at them and say, yeah, there's no reason to withhold these. And those can be made public as well in the catalog. And it's those types of things that's going to take a little bit of work, but the framework is already there. That's, we just want, the proper attention to be put on that in a final report. A final report is not going to be an amendment of the JFK Act, but it if it interprets it and carries it out the way that Congress intended it to in 92, it would be a major step forward for the public and all researchers to understand what the records put together as a whole and not in, select pieces or batches.
Yeah, and just to be also clear, one of the first thing that we're looking for is the immediate release of all ARRB final determination notifications. They should have been made public back in the 1990s, so that the public had a chance to follow the process, so it would be accountable and enforceable. And you know what? Without these final determinations, the public was really denied the opportunity to seek redress through the courts through judicial review, which the act also imposes. So between 1998 and 2017, when all these records were supposed to be reviewed, it was these final determinations that governed the National Archivist's actions, whether they were supposed to be reviewed on a certain date or released on a certain date. And since these final determinations were never made public, the public has been denied that opportunity, and it's still being denied the opportunity to know exactly what the ARB ordered with regard to each record they reviewed. And there is a written set of reasons for each record's postponement that was withheld during, like, from 1998 right through to 2017. and the public's being denied an opportunity to see those orders.
Yeah, and then the crazy thing is that Andrew has made FOIA requests for the final determinations directly to NARA. They acknowledge the receipt, and the official response in June of this year was that it could not identify any of them. And he, despite the fact that he found 450, physical copies in a random box at the archives itself. And that's bizarre because, it's certain that the review board made those decisions, issued the determinations, digitized them, and had them in their computer database, and handed them over to the National Archives when it finished its work in 1998. I summarized that correctly, right, Andrew?
And you know what? Both Judge Thunheim and Jeremy Gunn, senior legal counsel for the ARB, confirmed that all of the Assassination Records Review Board final determinations were transferred to the National Archives before the ARRB ceased operations. That's being confirmed in writing by both the former chair of the ARRB and by its senior legal counsel. And not only that, we found email and internal ARB memorandum where staff were being specifically tasked to attach final determinations to each of the assassination records before the assassination records were shipped off to NARA. The National Archives has these records. They were attached to the front of each assassination record, and that's 100% verified by the most senior officials at the ARRB.
Yeah. No, I mean, if we knew for sure that it was only the review board's determinations that were at issue as of September of 98, and the 25 years went by with nothing happening, no review, no adherence to those decisions, and that Trump fully took care of it here in 2025, albeit late, then we could be having a different discussion. But that's not the case. We know that records were transmitted to NARA after the review board. Judge Thunheim testified as such. She said there was records that came out this year, the review board that never seen, redactions he had never seen. And there's examples of records we have that show that they went to NARA at a later time after 1998. So
Yeah,
it
Mark,
creates a
I can speak to that in a
yeah.
specific instance
Yeah,
if
sure.
you think it's worth
Yeah, absolutely.
talking about one particular set of files. And these
Sure.
files have gotten an awful lot of attention over the last year and a half, 2 years. Those are the Reuben Efron files. So Reuben Efron was a CIA officer back in the 1950s and 1960s. And he gained a little bit of notoriety just in the last 2 years because his records were released, I believe in 2023. And what those records show is that Reuben Efron was a senior CIA officer that was responsible for monitoring and intercepting Lee Harvey Oswald's mail under the HD Lingua program. And when you look at these records, I mean, I put in a specific FOIA request. And I asked these questions back in, I think it was early 2024. Is there an Assassination Records Review Board final determination for three specific records regarding Reuben Efron? And again, I put a FOIA request in for these three records, and all I wanted were copies of the ARRB's final determinations. I got nothing back. I did get a receipt response, so the National Archives acknowledged receipt of my FOIA request, but I haven't received any of these records. So when you look at the identification aids for the Reuben Efron records, it appears that those specific records were transferred to the National Archives in either 1998 or in 2000, and it specifically in November 1998. So that's after the ARRB ceased its operations. So the ARRB, it's pretty clear that they didn't review the Reuben Efron records And that they were transferred to the National Archives after the review board ceased operations. So there's probably not going to be any ARRB final determination notification for the Ruben Efron files. But I can't know that for sure until the National Archives responds to my FOIA request. And then that FOIA request is months and months beyond NARA's deadline to respond. But that metadata that shows that they were transferred after the ARB went out of business is deeply concerning because those records have remained withheld for decades, and they weren't reviewed under the standards of the Act, and there's nothing governing their continued withholding. They should have been released to the public under the standards of the Act, and that simply didn't happen. And again, without an index, a comprehensive index and directory of records, we can't know the status of every record in the collection and whether it's been fully released or not. Does that make sense, Mark?
Yes, 100%. I was just thinking, like, if for those listening, you might be thinking, okay, there's a lot to unpack here, but it does seem like a problem, and it is, and we've outlined the complete chaos and disorganization that we're facing, despite the tremendous progress that's been made this year. I mean, we should all celebrate that. But to get the job done, I would ask that folks, write to their Congress representative, Representative Luna, or but if you feel more comfortable going to your local representative to get it there, is the first question is, why are the review board's final determinations being buried? Why are they not being publicly disclosed and publicly facing, as Andrew said, and it is required, show us the actual work that the review board did, that we paid tax dollars for all this work to get done in the 90s, and the chief function of the JFK Act was for the review board to make postponement. I mean, the no-brainer records were released that didn't have any sensitive information. The sensitive information went to the review board, at least the ones that did go to the review board, and that work was done, intense work, hours and hours of meetings to review records, negotiate and consult with agencies, and it resulted in, disclosure decisions. Show us that work so we can have an understanding of what's there, the foundation of the collection. And then please create a directory of identification aids, any record that an agency turned over to NARA for handling under the Act for review by the board required an identification aid. And if they sought postponement, a reason that they sought postponement for, and then that identification aid also allows for tracking of that record throughout the years so that the public can understand the status of it. And a directory of everything that does not have an identification aid that's still in the collection, that's otherwise been publicly disclosed or not, and the reasons for it. I mean, those would be the asks, for folks to get behind so that we're all on the same page and we can get to a complete collection. I mean, that's the start.
And you know what? The alternative is what we have. We have a somewhat scattershot approach where people with access to the task force and Representative Luna make requests for specific records that they want to see. And really, it's up to the discretion of the agencies which records they're going to release. And the agencies can that discretion, it may be strategic discretion to keep some records still withheld or not. And I think the approach that Mark and I are really, and Jeff Crudell, are strongly urging Congress to take is a more complete and whole look at the records collection itself so that we can see where the gaps are, where records that are still being withheld are, and why, and what the status is. So while the scattershot approach has produced some, scintillating new information that certainly adds to the understanding of what was happening back in 1963. It really doesn't tackle in a holistic way, everything that touches on every area of the assassination potentially. And yeah, it's a big accounting job, but it is incredibly important that it's undertaken. And it probably should be a job that the whole oversight committee and not just the task force takes, because they're the one with the statutory mandate to do it.
Do you consider this opposition or a confusion on purpose that they just don't want these out and they're doing everything they can to make it look like they're unorganized?
Yeah, Len, listen, it's that's an accusation that I mean, I don't want to make, but I've been pursuing these ARRB final determinations for the better part of a year and a half, to no avail. I don't think I'm asking for anything that is classified. And in fact, Jeremy Gunn advised in writing that the ARRB created these final determination notifications to be a declassified, fully publicly facing record, as that was part of the enforceability and accountability provisions of the Act. They were meant to be made public. And in fact, the ARRB was mandated to publish these, all of the ARB final determinations in annual reports each year that they were in existence. And sadly, that didn't happen. It happened for only 1 year. And then it stopped after 1995. And so, it was a little bit disappointing to search high and low for these annual reports that were supposed to have, 27,000 records. But I think probably, well, no, I know the ARRB got very quickly overwhelmed with the task of reviewing, and these annual reports were a major undertaking, and they simply didn't have the resources or time to get them done.
Well, is that a polite answer, do you think? Because you're saying they were overwhelmed, or they just didn't have the interest in it, and they are saying, well, what are they going to do? We're not going to go through with it, and we're not going to archive everything and index it. And so, what are they going to do? And now it's
Yeah,
come to this.
listen, the ARB was mandated to transfer all of these records to the National Archives. The National Archives has them. The ARRB had to report to Congress. They had to report to the president. And the fact that the archives is making it virtually impossible over the course of a year and a half to access these records, there are issues with the collection being not well organized and unruly. And it's a massive collection of records. I don't want to make excuses for them, but I also don't want to make allegations or accusations that I can't back up. You look at the reality of the action. They haven't produced records that we know they have. So, what's their motive? I don't know. I'm not privy to that. Mark, I don't know. Like I don't like to make
No,
speculative
that's
allegations
no,
against an
that's
institution that I mean,
yeah.
I think it's the archives is an amazing facility, and they have good people working there. If there was a decision to withhold these records, I doubt it was made by any of the people that I interacted with while I was there on my visit.
No, I mean, the way I look at it is, from 1998 until 2017. We know little to no, not a single record from 99 to 2016 was newly released. That's understandable because there was a roll down period as mandated by the review board. But certainly in 06 and 08, the review board had sort of I've heard Judge Thunheim talk about this. They had like a 10-year rule for protecting living persons. So if they made a decision in 96, based on the name of an agent or a living person that was redacted. They said, okay, 06 or 08 was their general rule of thumb. And that was a lot of their redactions. And then, so let's just say there wasn't, you know, training or attention at the archives in that point in time to make sure it was done. And let's say none of it got done up until 2017. Well, that was 8 years ago. And, you know, that there's been a lot of attention on that the last 8 years. Now, they're being actively notified of the issue through FOIA requests, through letters that I've sent, and more importantly, that Oliver Stone and Doug Horne had sent. And this letter we sent out this week, we'd appreciate an acknowledgement that it's being worked on, and an answer, and that the archives will produce an answer as to why they've not been disclosed yet. I mean, that's a reasonable ask.
I think it is. And you know, one of the last things that we ask in our letter is that there's some kind of protocol and framework with regard to the receipt and public disclosure of records now, because the act is pretty clear. Agencies have an ongoing duty and obligation to identify assassination records and to continue to identify assassination records and to expeditiously transmit those newly found records to the National Archives to be included in the assassination records collection. And we don't know that that's even happening with these new revelatory releases of the Joe Needys and the William Harvey files and the Diaz files. We don't know, because I can't see a lot of the newly found and newly released records on the National Archives website. Maybe they haven't had time to post them. It looks like the last new updates to the archives were in April. But these records that are coming out, they should be immediately transmitted to the National Archives and publicly released. And we don't see that happening in real time.
Yeah, that's why I'm suspicious. That's why I'm, you know, I don't want to be negative, but I'm saying it looks like this is just another case of the fox guarding the hen house. And although this is not the people who did any shooting or organizing or nothing, but it's the people in charge of the records, they are not going through to what they should have been doing. And not only that, they won't even give you the proper indexes to show you what is there.
Yeah, it seems like an effort to still control the narrative with these targeted and limited releases of records. And I mean, if that's the case, then we have a big problem. And that's why Mark and I and Jeff Crudell and Oliver Stone and Doug Horne and many, many other people are looking at the letter that we have drafted and submitted to both Representative Luna and other members of the Oversight Committee and Senator Rick Scott, who is on the Senate Oversight Committee. You know, your listeners, especially listeners in the United States, go to our JFK Chokeholds website, jfkchokeholds.com. There's a media section. This letter is attached as a PDF to our website. Go to our Twitter account, at JFK Chokeholds. We've posted a copy of the letter. You can repost our X post with the letter. Tag your local congressperson and Representative Luna and say, please follow up on this letter. I support the requests made and the recommendations made in this letter. You know, X is a tremendously powerful platform to get this kind of thing done. All you need to do is tag your local representative and Representative Luna and other members of the task force and say, look at this letter. This is an important letter and this job is important. I support the recommendations in this letter. And if 20 people do that, that's a big deal. If 100 people do that, that's huge. If 1,000 people do that, this is what happened after Oliver Stone released JFK. It was the public demanding that something be done. And, you know, it's so much easier in this day and age than it was in 1991 when the movie came out, or early 1992. to send an email, to tweet something. It takes 5 seconds. And the public still cares about the JFK assassination. So you know what? Lift a finger, tap a couple of buttons on your phone, and send a copy of this letter to your local representative, your local senator, and make an effort to get something done. It takes 5 seconds.
All right, we'll see if we can't get 20 people to do that.
The start.
Yeah, that's definitely a start.
I mean, it was encouraging to see the press that it was getting a couple of months ago, the first couple of days, right? And it just, it's of interest, maybe not to everyone, but to us, we were interested. And I look at it a little pessimistically. The more as revelations are made, it says this is every reason now why we can prove Lee Oswald didn't do it. And here, if you look through all the different the Harvey and all these different players, you can draw conclusions or make summations or suppositions, but nothing in these records say we actually traced it down and it was Lee Oswald,
You know, Len, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Oliver Stone's movie. I think Mark would probably say the same thing. I think most of this generation of researchers, including Jeff Morley and all the people that are actively involved, would credit Oliver Stone for raising the awareness and interest in the JFK assassination back in the early 90s. And you know what? Oliver Stone has specifically requested that the task force and Congress look at compliance with the JFK Records Act, and particularly the final determinations and the issue of whether records were transferred after the ARRB went out of business. Jim posted a letter. Maybe you can attach a link to the two letters written by Oliver Stone and Doug Horne. They're on Kennedy's and King. I can send you the links if you want to put them in the show notes, but they're powerful letters. And this is the guy, Oliver Stone, whose movie created this JFK Records Act. And it's Doug Horne, one of the senior investigators at the ARRB, who really uncovered some of the most important evidence regarding the autopsy that really turned the tables on the Warren Commission. And both of them are saying you got to release all the ARRB records and the final determinations, and you need to do oversight over that collection.
No, and my understanding is the final report of the task force is going to make its best effort to set what it considers to be the historical narrative on the case as of today. I mean, what's that going to be based on? Is it going to be based on just the testimony we've heard so far and the records that have that come out through individual efforts, which should be commended? But is the report going to be based on a concerted effort to also complete the records collection and in the spirit of the JFK Act and in the Oliver Stone movie, as Andrew just mentioned? I mean, it's all of it, right?
Well, I read everything with interest and good luck. And I watched Anna Luna on the Joe Rogan show talking about her interest in this and how she's learning more and more about it every day. But longtime researchers have known quite a bit of the stuff, and what you're asking for, I think, is just documents that kind of back up what you thought happened. The fact that they're dragging their feet constantly, it just makes me so suspicious that they've got their hand in it, the government, the higher government, the people that control the government, right?
Yeah, look, there's a limited amount of time left for people to act and for the task force to take concrete steps to do real oversight. And that's why it's so important that your listeners don't wait. If they want to see something happen, they all have to act quickly to put some demands and pressure on Congress to do the job that the JFK Records Act mandates and requires.
Yeah, well, you think all Americans would be, upset. But I guess there's so many other things to take your attention away.
This is true.
Even the similarities with the Epstein files. Oh, we got to release them. We got to release them. And then finally, he's in there. Oh, what are you guys worried about that for? It's old news, you know? So, but anyway, well, send me those links and I will, in the show notes, as you mentioned, I will make links so people can just click on a button and go right there and then forward that to their representative.
I'll do that when we're offline, and we'll send them over to you quickly, Len.
Okay, then. I think we kind of covered it for now. Before we wrap up, is there any, I give you opportunity, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, just really, we update our X feed on a fairly regular, almost daily basis at JFK Chokeholds. And we have a great website where a lot of the documentation is posted in a document section and a media section. And that's at jfkchokeholds.com. And we invite all of your listeners to follow us on X for regular updates and information.
Okay, thank you. We've been speaking to Andrew Eiler and Mark Damzik. And thank you very much for your time tonight, both of you. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
Thanks so
Len. It's
much,
always a
Len.
pleasure.
All right, very good. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
Will
Sounds
do.
good. Okay.